I would like to thank the organizer for inviting me, and I would like to present a very simple model of intra-seasonal oscillations in the Earth's atmosphere. And simple for me means that it's a mathematical model. So for me, mathematics is more simple than meteorology. So, and my idea is that perhaps we can discuss it and see whether we can find the trace of these mathematical results in the real meteorological data. Okay? So let us go further. Just a few main facts about intra-seasonal oscillations. So these are processes in the Earth's atmosphere with the periods 10 to 100 days. Location, they can be found everywhere, so in South Hemisphere, in the North Hemisphere, mid-latitudes, tropical zone, etc. Data, they can be found in many different data types, for instance, atmospheric angular momentum, zonal winds, etc. The reason or the cause of these oscillations is not known. There are a few different ideas about how to explain the cause of these oscillations. For instance, in the North Hemisphere, mid-latitude oscillations is sometimes even called topographical oscillation because the cause might be the mountains in the northern hemisphere. On the other hand, we can see this, these oscillations in South Hemisphere, and the first one, the most famous, I guess, this Brandstätter-Kuschnir oscillation was found in some in the data for South Hemisphere, and in tropics there is no mountains to generate it. Moreover, there are a lot of numerical models with many parameters to suit data, and a lot of researchers tried to simulate these oscillations, at least known oscillations in these models, and there is no general model where all known oscillations can be simulated. So there is no way to predict the appearance of these oscillations in some observed data. And also, the funny thing is that this topographical oscillation has been observed in the data produced by some model with and without topography, so by the choice of different tuning parameters. So, and there are a lot of open questions about these oscillations, which I will formulate later at the end of my talk with some possible answers already. Yeah? So, what is the main idea? The main idea is to use nonlinear resonance theory in order to describe this process. So first I will just state the main results of this theory. So if we have the system which is called the system of equations which is called resonance conditions, and you probably know what is it also. This is frequency of some linear wave. And this system describes nonlinear interactions among three waves. So this theory says that first, does not matter what spectral domain we are looking, we are studying, not all the modes in the spectral model will interact resonantly. So not all the modes will give solution of this system with omega big equal to zero or more than zero, but small. So if omega big is equal to zero, we are talking about exact resonances, and if it's positive, we are talking about quasi-resonances. So first, not all modes are interact resonantly. Then all resonant modes do not interact with each other, but they are divided into small dynamically independent clusters. It means that we can compute, if we can compute solutions of the system, then we will see that in spectral domain, I will show the picture on the next slide. In spectral domain, we will see a few small groups of resonantly interacting waves, and energy flow will go among the waves in each groups, and there will be no energy flow between these groups. Of course, I am talking about some time scale. Yeah? Yes?
Does omega parameterize some unresolved dissipative processes?
You mean this?
Yeah.
Well, yes, there can be different reasons of this omega, I mean, in physical systems. So now I'm just talking about n-dimensional system of equations, and I'm talking about mathematical properties of this system. But of course, yes, it can be dissipation, for instance. Yeah. So form of these small independent clusters is defined by boundary conditions, that's obvious. And these resonant interactions are not local in Kolmogorov sense, which means that what does it mean locality in Kolmogorov sense? That waves which interact have the length of the same order. It's not true for resonance interactions. It means that waves with wavelengths of let us say wave with a length L can interact with a wave with a length of order L square and even L cube. It depends on the form of dispersion function. So it means that if we are really going to study the whole dynamic of our wave system, we should go very far in spectral domain, not just to restrict ourselves with big scales. Yeah, and all these properties are valid for quasi-resonances. It means that we have we can compute big omega, which is function of small omega, for which all these properties are valid. And all these are just mathematical pure existence theory. So we have this system of equations of this form, and for very big class of dispersion functions, so all physically relevant dispersion functions are covered by these theorems. Yeah? So yes?
For definition's sake, the k's are wave vectors?
Yes.
The omegas are frequencies?
Are frequencies, yeah.
Are these a velocity?
No, it's just frequency of the wave.
Okay, so this is some kind of a spatial
Yes, yeah.
So, I mean, what you say, so these are the conditions for resonance.
Yes.
But, so part of the problem is, of course, in the case of Kolmogorov theory, so usually you say that local resonance are basically what gives you the best energy transfer.
Once more, part of Kolmogorov theory, yeah?
The issue is to determine the energy transfer between the different nodes. It's not because you have resonance that you may have very little energy transfer or a lot of energy transfer between the different nodes. So, I mean...
Okay. That's exactly what I wanted to talk about, but we decided that I have to talk about a small meteorological problem. So for this general theory. So general theory says following: these resonances, they are not part of Kolmogorov theorem. In fact, as soon as we have wave system, we have to pick out these exact resonances and quasi-resonances, just take them off. Because in Kolmogorov theory, they correspond to the case when small denominators, you know what is it? No. So in Kolmogorov theory, we have presentation for nonlinearity. In this presentation, exactly this equation is written in denominator. It's called the problem of small divisors, and these points are picked out from the Kolmogorov theory, which means following: as soon as we do not have exact resonances, we can use all Kolmogorov theory and construct this spectra of energy spectra. But in the case when we have exact resonances, we have some holes in the Kolmogorov spectra, and in these holes, energy behavior is completely different. So this was observed in the numerical simulations of Zakharov and his collaborators, and they call this mesoscopic wave turbulence. So they observed both Kolmogorov spectra and some special modes which interact with each other. It was for gravity water waves. They observed different behavior of big modes for capillary waves. They call it wedding cake turbulence or frozen turbulence, and so on. And in fact, my model of laminated wave turbulence, consists of two levels of turbulence, so to say. But I would not call this resonance clusters turbulence, because these are some clusters with very often periodic behavior, and I will show you later. So it's but nevertheless, they coexist with Kolmogorov spectra, and in fact, this is a big problem each time when we have some measurements, even in laboratory experiments. If we have both, it's not necessary. We can choose, for instance, in laboratory experiment, we can choose the boundary conditions, so the form of our box with water, in such a way that we will not have any exact resonance there. Then we can observe this Kolmogorov spectra. But as soon as we take box with a ratio which allows exact resonances, then we will have what they called anomalous spectra. And this is the reason, for instance, that there are few different Kolmogorov-like spectra for gravity water waves, for wave interactions, because people are making experiments in different boxes. They have different exact resonances. And after averaging, they have some anomalies in their spectrum, and they have this power, what is it, k in power alpha. Yeah. Scaling different, like minus 4 or minus 17 by 4 or something like this, a little bit. But the reason is that they just averaged different exact resonances. And in the case when we have, for instance, three-wave interactions of capillary waves, all different researchers show the same scaling, the same Kolmogorov exponent. And the reason is very funny, because for this case, I just proved, and it was necessary to use Fermat theorem to prove it, that there are no exact resonances among capillary waves in rectangular boxes.
But so, these resonance issues, they only really come in small denominator theory when you problems when you have weak wave turbulence. If you have strong nonlinearities, then the presence of the waves themselves affects the dispersion.
The question is that we do not really know where is the boundary between weak and strong turbulence. So we can, for instance, in numerical simulations, we can just make the energy, the whole energy of the wave system higher and see when it happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you really are trying to go after the sort of the large scale decadal variability, yeah, or intra-seasonal variability, there are definite indications from general circulation modeling, yeah, that actually the wave-wave interactions might indeed be relatively unimportant. Tapir Schneider has some nice results on that. But
yeah,
it's clear that the wave-mean flow interactions, uh-huh, are of central importance.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you would not have baryonic life cycles that look anything like the real thing without wave-mean flow interaction. And so it seems like, you know, it's sparking up the wrong tree to do a weak...
For intra-seasonal.
Following. I worked with meteorologists in Holland, in KNMI, yeah? And I took their model, which they use for weather predictions. Yeah, it is just spectral. It was the spectral model of barotropic vorticity equation. And I studied these resonant clusters in their model with all modes they had. And also, I took from them, in n-dimensional form, of course, the real values of energies in the atmosphere, and just checked. And all these clusters really existed, and we could see, there are no pictures, it's an old paper, so there are no pictures about this. We could see the different behavior of resonant and not resonant triads. So in resonant triads, there was periodic energy exchange between the modes. In non-resonant mode, just kept the energy and nothing been changed. And afterwards, I tried to make the whole energy of the system higher, and I went as high as 15 times more than the energy in the atmosphere. And still, I had it's a parallel physical review letters paper, 94. I mean, I have it somewhere, but.
But when you did that, yeah. I mean, this gets at the heart of what I'm trying to understand here. So when you did that analysis with the Dutch model, what dispersion relation did you do? Use the dispersion relation
this,
for Rossby
For spherical Rossby waves.
But so we know that the zonal flow strongly affects the dispersion relation for Rossby waves on a sphere. In fact, you're closer to a situation with homogenized potential vorticity than you are to a situation with just the beta effect. So I don't see how that dispersion relation actually could be governing the resonance conditions, because it's not the right dispersion relation.
That's the reason why I wanted to make more general talk. So the whole theory is valid for a wide range of dispersion relations. So we did a similar thing for Rossby waves in the ocean, for instance, and dispersion relation has a different form. It is like this. We did it for many different types of dispersion relation. So the main message here is that dispersion relation here is not, in fact, important. All the foundings are general. So we take another dispersion relation, we take another resonance condition, we will get another wave clusters, another resonance clusters. But we will get them. You know, that's the main message. Yeah.
I think Ray is asking, he doubts that this dispersion relation is correct. So, and you have, your model uses this dispersion relation, right?
Yes.
So, but that, what you said, you increase the energy and still saw this moves.
Yes.
So, this is my answer, your question.
Well, I'm saying that if you get the right answer with the Dutch model with that dispersion relation, there's something really strange. Because if you identify resonant triads it should not actually match what the Dutch model is doing, because that's not the dispersion relation that the real Rossby waves are satisfying. But I can believe there could be something generic, you know, that all resonant triads do sort of similar things. But if you have identified the resonant triads using that dispersion relation, they're not the right resonant triads.
I took the spectral model of barotropic vorticity equation on a sphere. So this was correct dispersion relation in this model. And I made numerical experiments with this model. If this model is not correct, if we have to take...
You see? Turbulence on the sphere using the same model.
Yes, of course.
You use the actual atmospheric.
Sorry? Put in some stirring in the model?
Energy, the whole energy, and I put some disturbance in all other modes which were there.
Yeah? Just let it evolve.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For 3.5 years. Yeah.
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 No, I have no doubt that you can you can actually do weak wave turbulence, weak wave theory on the sphere. The question is, what is the relevance of that particular prior to the actual atmosphere? So that's why
I am here. I do not know either. That's my purpose, to understand it, if it's possible. Yeah? So another question here is following. If we are going to go from this simple model to some measured data, we have to connect somehow the spherical modes which live on the whole sphere with some specific latitude, because all data are measured at some latitude belts. Yeah? So it's possible to do in a simple enough way, so we can estimate the value of this interaction coefficient, and it turned out that for every resonant thread we can find what we called interaction latitude. So this is a latitude where this interaction coefficient get the most part of it.
What is M capital?
This is a function of M and L. So it's very simple, actually. It's N eta is L eta L e plus 1. Just this.
Actually, even if we're living in the world of triads, there's an interesting wrinkle there, an interesting effect that's not in those triads. So those are Euler's gyroscopic equations, mm-hmm. the periodic solutions. In the real atmosphere, you've got two things that are not in those conservative equations. You have forcing. So for example, you have a forcing that maintains A2, and then all three are damped to some extent. Mm-hmm. Now I had an old paper where if you do those triad equations with forcing and damping instead of periodic solutions, you get chaotic solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it should be not with arbitrary small forcing or damping. Yeah.
I mean, if you
you can just get two different regimes, of course. So first periodic, and then how it goes to chaotic.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, so if you put just a constant in the second equation, and then if you put damping and all. You can constant force, it doesn't have to be time-dependent forcing. Those equations with a constant in one of the equations and linear damping in all three have chaotic regimes.
In fact, I would like to see the paper. Yeah. Okay, but...
because you're maintaining, in that case, you maintain A away from zero.
In fact, it's very interesting because actually the three axes, one axis is the unstable manifold, and the other two axes are the stable manifolds.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get these interesting behaviors where it shoots off on one axis and then comes back in through the other.
Now, it's really very interesting because right now we are trying to finish everything we can about periodic behavior of these clusters. But the next step will be to see how these periodic regimes turn into chaotic, of course. Yeah. So, yes. And this model in Holland was for wave numbers less or equal to 21, and in this domain I have found four triads and three butterflies, and butterfly is just a group cluster of two triads connected via one mode. Yeah, and this picture means following: each node here is just wave vector, and three wave vectors, which are solution of resonance. So it's clear, yeah? Okay, so let us see what we have here. So here we have just all the data in this computational domain. So all resonant triads are here, all the coefficients are here, all the interaction latitudes are here, and the reason why I show it is following. Later, when we will talk about the open questions about intra-seasonal oscillations, one of them is following. How can intra-seasonal oscillations which are observed, the different latitudinal belts interact with each other. From this system, from this table, we can see at least one mechanism. This is group of six triads. Wave numbers are here. And these are latitudinal belt. So we have formula for this latitudinal for this latitude. Its formula is like this: cosine square for phi zero. It means that we have two symmetrical latitudinal belts, and we have to check in the data where, in fact, these oscillations can be observed. Yeah, and in this group we can see that one triad has latitude 17 grad, and another triad from the same cluster has latitude 50. It means that we have some way for energy to go from this latitude to another latitude. It just for this. Yeah. So now these are real data, how these clusters look like. This is a real geometrical picture. So one wave number, another wave number. This is what we called a topological picture. So it means that from this picture, we just see that here, this is too complicated, so to say. We can see that here, there are just 18 triangles, four butterflies, one chain of three triads, and so on. And what is important about this topological structure? That we can immediately write down corresponding dynamical systems. So as soon as we see this picture, we can write down a system for slowly changing amplitudes. And it means that instead of solving in this domain 2,500 equations on all the modes, we just will need to solve only 120, even less. So 128 modes are important, but in fact most of them are here or here, and these systems are integrable. So we know everything about behavior, energetic behavior of these small clusters. And in fact, in order to know all dynamics, we need just to program one system of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 equations. And this one system like this, 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 and that. So we will just, instead of solving a very huge system of nonlinear differential equations, we'll have a few small independent systems. And of course, the difference between different clusters here is in interaction coefficients. But as soon as we have found solutions of resonance conditions, we know everything about these systems. Yeah? So this is a structure in the spectral domain 21. So what we have now is following. Okay, as soon as we have cluster which is just triangle, so three resonant modes, yeah, we know the system is integrable. What do we know if we have a butterfly? Because it is it is the second group which is met often. Yeah, in this case, we could describe the energetic behavior of these groups depending on what is the common mode between these two triads. So it means following. In each triad, one mode is special. It's a mode with the highest frequency. Okay, so it is the frequency which is sum of two others. Yeah. So as soon as this common mode is not high frequency in both triads, we can just forget about this connection. So these two triads will behave almost like isolated triads. So if in one triad this mode is, so we call it passive mode, yeah? If in one triad this mode has high frequency, then situation is different. So we call this mode active because it can really send, so to say, energy into other triad or take it. Yeah, and this is also a situation where we cannot forget that we have a cluster. Yeah, I just showed here the frequencies in order to show where what sort of common mode we have. And all the numbers in the circles are real solutions of these resonance conditions for this dispersion function for spherical Rossby waves. Yeah? So this means that in terms of passive and active connections, we can in fact interpret dynamics also of larger clusters. For instance, clusters which are shown here. Because each time we just put this P, A, P, A, A, P, and just look in the solution set, and we can see where we can forget about the connection and where we should regard the whole cluster. And this is done now already by some program in Mathematica, so it goes automatically from the data for resonances. Yeah, it's not published yet. Yeah. So the groups like this can also be classified via this connection type, and so on. So here, for instance, we have a 16 triads cluster, which we have found for Rossby waves in the spectral domain till 1,000. So we just wanted to see the general picture. Yeah. And here we can see immediately. No connection here, no connection here, no connection here, and so on. So, in fact, the largest cluster here contains only four triads, one, two, three, four, this one. All others are... smaller. So,
well, we should probably wrap up and
sorry?
We should finish soon and continue this as an informal discussion.
Let us do like this. Just a few words. So for each sort of cluster, we can study the dynamics of the cluster also analytically. So we have found about to construct some new conservation law for clusters, which make them often integrable. And if not, then it's easy to compute because, for instance, in some cluster we can go from 10 equations to 4. So it's very constructive. Some numerical simulations with four triad chains show that there are also periodic oscillations. Although, so we could not prove analytically here that the system is integrable. But in general message is that we construct small clusters, and these clusters are mostly integrable. So very often we can prove it. Even when we cannot prove it, then we have numerical simulations which show that they look like integrable. So now integrable means in this context periodical. So now, let us see. I just took the paper of Michael Gill. He's a known and accepted specialist on intra-seasonal oscillations. It was a review paper where he formulated a few very important questions about intra-seasonal oscillations. And it looks like we can answer all of them using this simple model. So, for instance, what is the cause of this oscillation in South Hemisphere? The same as in the North, these clusters, resonance clusters. Yeah. Why some researchers found these North oscillations like 40 days and others 20, 30 days? It's also clear because in the nonlinear process, period depends on the initial energy. So if this winter, where observation data were obtained, was just colder, then the period is longer. That's all. Here again, why oscillations are better observable in winter data, it's about your question, because in summer, energy can be already so high that we go from weakly nonlinear regime to a strong nonlinear regime. Yeah. How can tropical and mid-latitude oscillation interact? I explained already. There is another mechanism, but no time for it. Yeah. And the most important thing is here. How to predict intra-seasonal oscillations in the observed data? Yeah. Or in the new, to predict in the atmospheric behavior. So, in fact, if this model is true, then it's very easy, because we can in fact compute all the clusters, we can compute wave numbers, and we can compute latitudinal belt. So if somebody comes to me and says, well, we are having this data taken in the latitude, say, 45, and where in which spherical harmonics we have to look for. I can compute it, and we can check. And that's what I would like to do, because I myself never saw measured data. So all this reasoning is theoretical. The only information which I got from measured data was this undimensional magnitudes of the wave amplitudes and distribution of energy at some moment, because this is what is needed to compute a period. It depends. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There is. I mean, the proof would be in the pudding and see how well you can actually reproduce spectra. But it's clear there's one whole class of intra-seasonal oscillations that you will not get by this method because you're missing the basic physics of it,
what
which is
do
like the Madden-Julian oscillations. The, probably the after El Nino, where El Nino is intra-seasonal. Let's say for intra-seasonal oscillations, you know, one of the biggest targets for explanation, one of the biggest signals is this thing called the Madden-Julian oscillation, and that's very clearly an interaction between the large-scale waves and the convection pattern. And Andy Maida even has a very nice mathematical analysis of the Madden-Julian oscillation through the multi-scale interactions, which he presented during the first week of the conference, you might remember. And you know, and if you're trying to compare this sort of thing to data, the first thing you'll confront is that, you know, most of what you see in data in the tropics is the Madden-Julian oscillation, or a big part of it, and that won't come out in this at all. So the question is, how can you even test? How can you even test this against the data?
I do not know.
So you don't have
You have some anomaly in convection, it can be a mechanism to put enough energy into these modes, into one mode or couple of modes in the cluster to oscillate. I don't know. Mountains can have the same effect. They can also move a little bit the frequency, and it means that in order to take them into account, we will need to recalculate these wave numbers. I do not know. I do not claim also that we can explain all the processes of this range based on this model. I do not know. The only thing, the only message which I would like to make clear is following. As soon as we take threads of planetary waves, we get immediately correct magnitude of periods. That's one point. Yeah. And other researchers has a lot of problems trying to disturb one linear wave in order to get one linear Rossby wave, in order to get a correct period, because maximum periods of Rossby waves are like 15, 18 days. It's not enough. Yeah. So in this model, we get immediately correct magnitude of periods. We have possibility to connect this with some latitudinal belt, and we have possibility to introduce some additional meteorologically important effects. But that's all. I cannot go myself further. I'm not a meteorologist. I mean, that's all. Yeah.
Okay, let's thank Lena.
Thank you.
There should be tea and cookies outside.
I'm sorry.